It's Thursday, October 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, crude package bombs are sent to several top Democrats, including former Presidents Obama and Clinton.
We're extremely angry, upset, unhappy about what we witnessed this morning, and we will get to the bottom of it.
Also, the U.S. CIA director listens to a tape of the alleged murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. A migrant caravan resumes its long trek across Mexico. And there is a new billionaire in South Carolina with a lottery jackpot worth more than $1.5 billion. That's on today's International Edition. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday. We'll start here in Washington, where federal authorities are investigating several crude explosive devices that were sent to former President Barack Obama, as well as former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, former CIA Director John Brennan, and several other prominent Democrats. The devices were addressed to Mr. Obama at his Washington home, as well as the suburban New York home of former President Bill and Hillary Clinton. Another device was addressed to John Brennan at the CNN newsroom in New York. Other packages were sent to former Attorney General Eric Holder and Democratic members of Congress Maxine Waters and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, all top critics of the Trump administration. A similar device was found Monday at the home of billionaire financier George Soros, a prominent supporter of liberal causes. At the White House Wednesday, President Trump condemned the action, saying that political violence has no place in the United States.
The full weight of our government is being deployed to conduct this investigation and bring those responsible for these despicable acts to justice. We will spare no resources or expense in this effort. And I just want to tell you that in these times, we have to unify. We have to come together and send one very clear, strong, unmistakable message that acts or threats of political violence of any kind have no place in the United States of America.
Later, at a rally in the state of Wisconsin, Trump told a cheering crowd that such violence is a threat to American democracy.
Any acts or threats of political violence are an attack on our democracy itself. No nation can succeed that tolerates violence or the threat of violence as a method of political intimidation, coercion, or control. We all know that. Such conduct must be fiercely opposed and firmly prosecuted.
However, the president said the media must end what he called endless hostility and constant negative and false attacks and stories. The president has previously referred to journalists as enemies of the people. The top two Democrats in Congress, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, issued a statement Wednesday afternoon accusing Trump of fanning the flames of political unrest. Time and time again, the statement said, the president has condoned physical violence and divided Americans with his words and his actions. That's pointing to recent Trump campaign rallies where he has voiced support for a legislator who used physical violence against a reporter, and where he has branded the press enemies of the people. The Time Warner Center in New York, meanwhile, where news network CNN has studios, was evacuated Wednesday morning when a suspicious package addressed to former CIA Director John Brennan was found in the mailroom there. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio said there was no question these incidents were acts of terrorism.
What we saw here today was an effort to terrorize. This clearly is an act of terror attempting to undermine our free press and leaders of this country through acts of violence.
However, de Blasio said that New Yorkers will not be intimidated, saying residents have withstood other such efforts and have not given in to fear. Here in Washington, Police Chief Peter Newsom said that his department will be working with federal authorities to ensure the persons responsible are caught and brought to justice.
We will obviously be working with our federal partners at the FBI and the Secret Service to find those that are responsible. for mailing those packages. I will say, and you will hear other law enforcement officials say, that we will not let this type of terroristic behavior interrupt our lives, and we are going to do everything we possibly can to ensure that there is a swift closure in this case.
In Coral Gables, Florida, former Secretary of State and First Lady Hillary Clinton told a political rally that her family is fine, thanks to the dedicated efforts of the men and women of the Secret Service.
Every day, we are grateful for their service and commitment, and obviously never more than today. But it is a troubling time, isn't it? And it's a time of deep divisions, and we have to do everything we can to bring our country together.
Wednesday evening in Austin, Texas, former CIA Director John Brennan said the president's rhetoric, such as praising a candidate who attacked a reporter or offering to pay the bail of someone who attacks the press, has inspired those who would want to carry out acts of violence.
And his rhetoric too frequently, I think, fuels these feelings and sentiments that now are bleeding over into potentially acts of violence. So I'm hoping that this is going to make it clear to him that what he has done heretofore, as far as a lot of this rhetoric, really is counterproductive. It is un-American.
The attempted bombings overtook news tied to the midterm elections, which take place in less than 2 weeks. The campaign has featured several pitched fights over immigration, the Supreme Court, and sexual violence against women. For the latest on this story, be sure to check out our website, voanews.com. Among the top stories in the world, Trump says explosives targeting political figures are abhorrent. Trump says the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia bears ultimate responsibility for dissidents' killing. Pakistan mediating between Saudi Arabia and Iran to end Yemen war. Caravan of migrants resumes trek to U.S. and winning $1.5 billion lottery tickets sold in South Carolina. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. U.S. CIA Director Gina Haspel is in Turkey to investigate the death of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. She has reportedly listened to an audio recording of his torture and murder. The Washington Post said Wednesday that a person familiar with the audio, who claimed it was compelling and could put more pressure on the United States to hold Saudi Arabia accountable for the death of Khashoggi, who was a contributing columnist for the newspaper. U.S. President Donald Trump, who has reiterated that he views Saudi Arabia as a great ally and an important purchaser of U.S. tanks, bombs, and planes, seems to have grown more suspicious of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's role in Khashoggi's death. In his first public comments on the incident Wednesday, the Crown Prince called the killing of Khashoggi a heinous crime that cannot be justified. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe begins his three-day trip to China later today, the first in 7 years by a Japanese leader, with a vow of improving cooperation and friendship in a relationship with a bitter past. During a key policy speech Wednesday before the Japanese parliament, Mr. Abe said the effort to engagement will involve people-to-people exchanges, deeper business ties, and sports cooperation. The visit comes as the two countries mark the 40th anniversary of the Treaty of Japan-China Peace and Friendship. It also follows a visit to Japan in May by Chinese Premier Liu Qiqiang. Stephen Nagy is a senior associate professor in politics and international studies at the International Christian University in Tokyo. He has written that both Chinese President Xi Jinping and Mr. Abe have consolidated their domestic political power despite security differences and believe their countries can benefit from closer ties.
for the Japanese. I think they do have concerns about the growing trade war and technological competition between the United States and China, and what that will mean for Japanese businesses going forward. If both countries develop independent AI and digitized markets, that means the Japanese business community is going to have to bifurcate their business footprint. That's expensive. It affects supply chains, and it impacts prices. On the Chinese side, I think the rapprochement with Japan is all about economy of enemies. Over the past few years, China has put a tremendous amount of pressure on countries within the region, whether it's South Korea, Japan, and Vietnam. And, of course, its trade policies have created friction with many countries in the region and outside the region. And it has come to a realization that if it wants to concentrate and be successful moving its Sino-U.S. relations forward, that it's going to have to put out fires in the neighborhood and build bridges and build more positive future-oriented relations within the region.
This comes amid tariffs by the Trump administration and counter-tariffs. Also, you have a Japanese economy that's reviving somewhat while the Chinese economy is slowing.
The Chinese are looking for ways that they can keep the economic momentum going. Japan represents a very good partner within the region, both from the levels of technological infusion, but also Japan and Japanese firms still have an enormous amount of capital and skills that they can share with the Chinese. This is important for economic stability within the Chinese context, and it's important for development of the economy towards a less manufacturing-based economy and an economy that really focuses on technology.
These two countries have long-standing animosities that date back to the Second World War. Have we overcome those security concerns?
No, not at all. What we're seeing in the East China Sea is we have daily Chinese naval vessels and merchant vessels going into the exclusive economic zones that Japan claims around the Senkaku Islands. In the South China Sea, we have China building and militarizing islands in the South China Sea. These are challenges to Japan from the context of sovereignty in the case of the Senkaku Islands. And when we look at the South China Sea, the challenge isn't a territorial issue. It's one about ensuring that resources can transfer in and out of the South China Sea, but also that import and export of goods in and out of the region isn't disrupted. This would affect the Japanese economy tremendously, not to mention affecting the South Korean economy, the Taiwanese economy, and the Japanese economy. There's great stakes and stability in the East and South China Sea. Both countries need to work hard to ensure that they are not destabilized.
Stephen Nagy speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. Nagy said a successful summit would involve closer Sino-Japanese third country infrastructure development cooperation, shelving of territorial disputes, and deepening economic cooperation, for instance, on the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership free trade regime. A caravan of Central American migrants resumed its arduous journey to the United States Wednesday after pausing Tuesday to mourn a fellow traveler who was killed in a road accident and to tend to travel-related ailments that have developed amongst the marchers. Such caravans have been routine over the years without much attention, but U.S. President Donald Trump has used this caravan to rally his Republican base before the November 6th midterm elections. At a rally for Republican candidates in Wisconsin Wednesday night, the president said he will not allow thousands of people to invade our country illegally.
When our country is assaulted by thousands and thousands of people marching, and they openly say, we're going to go into the country, we can't do that. We can't do that. Can't allow that. It's unfair to you, but it's also unfair to thousands and thousands of people that have gone through a legal process. Some are waiting online 10 years. Everything is perfect, and they don't get in, but other people just march right in. It will not happen. You watch. It won't happen. We can't let it happen.
Trump has blamed Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala for not stopping their citizens from departing for the U.S. He said Monday he would begin cutting off or reducing foreign aid to those countries and threatened last week to use military troops to close the U.S. southern border. The caravan of more than 7,000 mostly Hondurans who are fleeing violence and poverty in their home country was in the southern Mexican town of Huitzla, about 50 kilometers north of the Guatemalan border and about 1,600 kilometers from the closest U.S. border crossing. On Wednesday, some set out at first light to the town of Mapastepec. Karen Marichela Reyes of Honduras was walking with her small children. She said many of those in the caravan are single mothers who are not receiving help from their husbands or the fathers of their children. She said, I say they should lend us a hand. There are a lot of us who are poor, and we are in need of it. We need to be allowed into the United States because, honestly, we are a lot of single mothers with no help from the fathers of our children, mothers who have children from fathers who are not the parents of the men we live with. They are different men, and they do not help us feed the children that are not biologically theirs. That is why we ask the United States to lend us a hand and let us in so we can work and help ourselves. Another Honduran in this caravan, Sara Melgar Confaridia, said that many in the caravan feel for their fear, that is, for their lives, and hope to escape violence at home. She said, I hope to God they understand that the people or the President of the United States understands that if we are migrating, it is because we are afraid of our country. There are organized gangs who have threatened us with death, and we are afraid. Sometimes we do not want to go out, and when we do, it's with fear. Many in the caravan may not qualify for asylum even if they do reach the U.S. border. The United States does not consider escapes from poverty and violence as qualifying factors. International law requires that individuals fleeing violence and persecution must be allowed access to the country where they are seeking asylum and the right to apply for it. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. 10 leading human rights organizations have chosen 3 human rights defenders, 2 from Turkey and Colombia, and a third, a Sudanese refugee in Papua New Guinea, as finalists for the 2019 Martin Ennals Award. As Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, the award honors Amnesty International's Secretary General from 1968 to 1980.
The 3 human rights defenders won out over 75 candidates because of their stubborn pursuit of justice for the rights of disadvantaged and marginalized people, often at great risk to their personal freedom and lives. Aaron Keskin, a lawyer and human rights activist in Turkey, was imprisoned in August 2016 as part of a national sweep 1 month after an attempted coup against the president. Director of the Martin Ennals Foundation, Michael Kambata, tells VOA, at the time of her arrest, Keskin was editor-in-chief of a newspaper that dealt with Kurdish issues. He says she was held responsible for many of the published articles and was given a 12-and-1/2-year sentence. This currently is under appeal.
She has worked on basically on women's issues, everything from sexual assault in prison to that's one where she actually created an organization. She works on LGBTI issues and Kurdish issues and also on the Armenian genocide. Those have been her 4 main priorities since 1996.
The second nominee, Marino Cordoba Berrio, a member of the Afro-Colombian ethnic group, has been fighting for his people's right of ownership over their land. Kambata says he has faced threats and attacks from powerful landowners interested in exploiting the land for commercial logging and mining. The last nominee, Abdul Aziz Mohammed, is from Darfur in Sudan. He fled to the capital Khartoum, got into trouble as a student activist, and fled again to Australia seeking asylum. He has been in detention on Manus Island, Papua New Guinea, for the past 5 years. Kambata says Mohammed has been advocating for the hundreds of men who are living in horrid, punitive conditions on the island. He does this through the skillful use of social media and podcasts.
He keeps things peaceful, and he has been a voice to the wider world, particularly to Australia, on the impact and the consequences. The real thing that he highlights is not so much the actual conditions of the camp, but the fact that they have nowhere to go and they have no future.
The High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, will announce the laureate of the Martin Ennals Award February 13th. The winner will receive a cash prize of $30,000. The two runners-up will receive $10,000 each. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, there's a new billionaire in South Carolina. And will Anastasia return to Russia? You're listening to VOA's International Edition.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Thanks for being with us on this Thursday edition of International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Lottery officials have confirmed that one person picked all the correct numbers for Tuesday's Mega Million lottery drawing worth more than $1.5 billion. The winning numbers, 28, 70, 5, 62, 65, and a Mega Ball of 5, were played by someone who bought the ticket at the KC Mart in Simpsonville, South Carolina. South Carolina Education Lottery Chief Operating Officer Tony Cooper had some advice for the person holding the winning ticket.
Sign the back of that ticket because it's a barrier instrument. Whoever bears that instrument can cash that instrument. So sign the back of that instrument. Take a few days. Take that deep breath again. Call the lottery. We will tell you who to go to, how to do it, and take time. You have up to 180 days to cash the tickets.
CJ Patel is the owner of the KC Mart.
We are so glad to be here. You know, it's good attention and good for the community. You know, whoever is the winner is, hopefully he spends that money locally and, you know, do some good stuff for the community.
Because South Carolina caps retailers' share of the reward for selling the winning ticket, Patel's store gets $50,000. Tony Cooper says if the winner does not come forward in 180 days, the money will go back to the states. If the winner decides to take a lump sum cash option instead of an annuity, the prize would be worth $877 million. In addition to the big winning ticket, 34 second-place tickets worth $1 million each were sold in 16 states and the District of Columbia. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. A young man in Minneapolis, Minnesota, has set out to do something about the global refugee crisis, even if it has only a modest impact. He started a fashion company while in college, selling accessories with a special connection to refugees. In this report, narrated by Molly McKittrick, VOA's June So introduces you to the young entrepreneur.
Perhaps nothing reminds people of the global refugee crisis better than these images taken on a beach in Greece. These jackets, thousands of them, were worn by refugees as they desperately crossed the Mediterranean Sea by boat. The stunning image moved Mohamed Malim, a business major. He started a fashion company last December, and his first product is a bracelet.
This bracelet is made out of recycled life jacket refugees have worn on their journey to safety in Greece. As you can see, the outside is the orange life jacket, and the inside is actually a leather embedded our company's name and our slogan, Building Humanity.
From Alim, now graduated from college, fashion is a tool to tell a story.
Everyone uses fashion in a way where they basically portray themselves, you know, they tell a story, and I wanted to tell a story, you know, through my fashion lenses.
He named his company Epimonia, a Greek word.
It means perseverance. When a refugee flees from a civil war or natural disaster, they go through a lot of hardships during the journey, and they persevere through the journey.
As a former refugee from Kenya, Malim knows how it feels.
My parents fled from the civil war back in Somalia during the 1990s. I was born in Kenya in a refugee camp when I was 3 years old. We first landed in Texas. I know how to overcome those obstacles in America.
The bracelets are made in the Dream Factory in the Netherlands, where Malim's business partner, also his uncle, employs refugees from all over the world.
This bracelet is not only a fashion piece, but it's a vehicle that supports and helps refugees. We give 50% of profit to nonprofit organizations that support refugees.
Malim sells the bracelets online and through college tours, where he campaigns to raise awareness of the refugee crisis.
We need to understand that when a refugee flees from war, it's not their choice. And when they come to a new country, we need to embrace their culture, you know, the diversity and their talents that they're bringing in.
Hence, the embracelet. Malim plans to expand to other fashion items. For producer June So in Minneapolis, Minnesota, I'm Molly McKitterick, VOA News.
A Broadway musical about a woman who may be the last surviving member of a Russian royal family is starting its tour around the United States, Europe, Asia, and Latin America. Ironically, one country it won't visit is Russia. Elena Wolf explains why in this story narrated by Anna Rice.
Anastasia, the youngest daughter of Tsar Nicholas II, may have been Russian, but she's been singing up a storm in Spanish, German, and Korean. At least the stage character is. And from there, the Broadway musical Anastasia will continue to be seen in spots around the globe.
From very early on, we discovered that our show had broad international appeal. If you stand in our lobby, you hear people speaking languages from all over the world.
But not in Russian, just yet. The tour of Anastasia will be leaving out its historical homeland for now. It's not politics or linguistics that are a hindrance, but the history of Anastasia and her family that has a deeper and more complex meaning for Russians.
The musical will have to be recoded for the Russian audience, and by that I mean cultural codes that the Russian mentality is based on. We look at our history differently than Americans or Europeans.
Even so, Dmitry Bogachev did want the musical to first play in Moscow. Bogachev is the only Russian producer among more than 700 members of the Broadway League of Producers. Turns out, simplifying the plot and making it more family-friendly led to it becoming a hit first in New York.
Families with small kids and teenagers come to see this musical. They are not as immersed in their context as the Russian audience. You need to explain more about the 1917 revolution, the execution of the Romanov family. You don't need to explain that to the Russian audience. In fact, they would see that as a banality.
And Anastasia isn't just a success with audiences. It was nominated for 2 Tony Awards in 2017, including for Best Actress and Costume Design.
Beautiful musical. The stars are terrific. It has the best projections I've ever seen in a show. It convinces you you're on the river, you're in the forest, you're in snow. It's just gorgeous.
Casting Anastasia in places around the world wasn't as hard as you might think. Many of Anastasia's singers grew up knowing who she was and what she represents.
Anastasia was my role model when I was growing up, and she still is. Many young women find inspiration in her, a strong, independent woman who does everything to pursue her goals and chooses her own path in life.
The musical will be touring the U.S. until the end of November and then come to Europe. When the Grand Duchess will come to Moscow is still unknown. For Elena Wolf in New York, I'm Anna Rice, VOA News.
And we have this update for the baseball fans in our audience. The Boston Red Sox defeated the Los Angeles Dodgers 4-2 to take a 2-0 lead over the Dodgers in baseball's World Series. The series now moves to Los Angeles for Game 3 on Friday. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us on voanews.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're at @VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy your day.